Yes, hello, Tony. I'm glad to be back on your radio show. My name is Manfred Petridge. I run an alternative political blog since 20 years, and I'm living in the Republic of Abkhazia on the Black Sea, so I'm very close to the, at the moment, crisis Russia-Ukraine. And we can talk about that this evening.
Yes, I think so, because we've seen the troops massing on both sides of the border. It'd be clear here that it was the Ukrainians that started this. Then we had something like 80,000 Russian soldiers come doing exercises close to the border, maneuvers. And then just today we've heard from Putin that they're going to begin scaling down and going home. There were some peace talks going on in Vienna. But anyway, this is a potential flashpoint. I just wonder, since you live so close by, what you make of this conflict, Manfred?
The situation in Ukraine is very bad since the putsch to 2014. And the economic situation has not improved. On the contrary, the people suffer a lot. And the problem is that the government can't do anything or is incapable of doing it because they are investing too much money into the military because of this conflict with the two regions in the east of Ukraine since 2014. And so there's a lot of dissatisfaction in the population. And although he became president with the promise, Zelensky became president with the promise that he will resolve the problem, but he hasn't done it. And so there's a lot of dissatisfaction around. And so what he's probably thinking and is being pushed to is to move the military towards the so-called firing line in the east. And this, of course, brought the Russians into an alarm situation, and that's why they brought their soldiers forward to the border area towards Ukraine. And it could be that Zelensky will do a Saakashvili, if you understand what I mean, because 2008, Saakashvili was president of Georgia, and he attacked South Ossetia and Abkhazia in the hope that then the NATO countries would help him out of this situation or come to his aid. So maybe Zelensky thought he can start a conflict and then NATO will have to help him. But it looks like that the Germans and the French had told him not to do anything, you know, they put on the brakes. And this whole thing, and also that the Russians showed a lot of strength because they're really fed up with the situation that Ukraine is not abiding by the Minsk agreement, which was the agreement 215, that Ukraine talked to the presidents of those two runaway republics, which they have not done. So this is a situation. A lot of people in Ukraine dissatisfied with the government, the new president not keeping what he promised, thinking that he can do a conflict to distract the people and force also a NATO membership and all these things, right?
What about Germany? Because they're quite nearby. And there has been some, we've just heard that Merkel is about to step down. We've got elections there as well. So what do you make of the influence that Germany's got over this? Obviously, the history between Russia and Germany is a pretty horrendous one from the Second World War and before. And it does look as if the Americans from afar, and probably egged on by the British too, are trying to get some sort of conflict going in Ukraine where they're far away and safe. What are the Germans making of all this?
Well, the Germans have nothing to say. And Merkel has said that she will end her term already 2 years ago. So this is nothing new. She said that when she was elected for this last term, she said this is her last. And so this is nothing new, and only that in the last days, the chancellor candidates from the other parties have been nominated for the election in September. Right. And that has happened. But I mean, Germany is a signatory of the Minsk agreement. So they are involved there, right, together with the French and the Ukrainians. They are the three parties in this and in this agreement. Right. So plus, of course, those two republics. And so that's the situation. But what I found interesting today, according to my research, is that this whole thing could be kind of like a planned. This Ukraine thing is only a part of the whole big plan, because it has come out that the president of Belarusia, there was a regime change. He was supposed to be killed. And President Putin mentioned that 2 days ago in his speech. He said that the people who did the plot for the putsch were, you know, they were discovered, and therefore this putsch was hindered. You know, they caught the people who wanted to kill the president, Lushenko. Plus, on the other side, that two American warships plus two British warships were supposed to come into the Black Sea. So on the whole front, there was to be a provocation towards Russia, right? In the Black Sea with the warships, the Ukrainians moving their military forward to the firing line, and at the same time, a regime change happening in Belarusia. So this was a big, big plan there.
Well, I mean, but Belarusia is interesting. Lukashenko being attempts to kill him and get rid of him, because he's one of the only people in Europe that stood up against the IMF and said, no, I'm not taking money to lock my country down with the COVID.
Right. And the fourth thing that happened is the Navalny protests. They also happened at the same time. So it looks like it's all coordinated.
So do you think they've got anywhere with this this attempt? I mean, you're saying is you think...
No. It all failed. All four things have failed, because the Russians discovered that there was supposed to be this putsch in Belarus. And also they moved the military forward and said, if the Ukrainian army attacks the two runaway republics, they will answer with the total destruction of the Ukraine army. And also the Americans canceled their entry into the Black Sea. So everybody pulled back. I mean, the West pulled back. Right.
So if the Ukrainians were a little bit more closer to NATO, because there is all sorts of attempts to get them into NATO, particularly by the United States, this would have been a different story.
Yeah, but they can't. You see, Ukraine and Georgia cannot become members of NATO, because in the NATO statutes it says there is a new member can only become one if it does not have territorial conflict. That means, as long as Ukraine says that Crimea belongs to Ukraine, it cannot become a NATO member. The same applies to Georgia. As long as Georgia says South Ossetia and Abkhazia belong to Georgia, they cannot become member of NATO. So they have only two options, either to give up the NATO membership if they keep on saying that these territories belong to them, or They give up saying that these are their territory, and then they can become members.
Well, we keep hearing here about the annexation of Crimea, but I wonder whether the West has really just annexed Ukraine, actually, and it's the other way round. So do you think there's anything to learn from the build-up to and the start of World War II in this conflict about the possibility of it escalating?
Oh, yeah. I mean, also Biden has to distract from the total, bad economic situation because of COVID. He has to distract because there are so many companies bankrupt, people unemployed, and homeless, and all these things, and all these conflicts regarding racism and so forth. So we know how politicians work. If they have problem inside their country, they have to create the problem outside their country, right? So Biden could, or the people behind Biden, I mean, it's not Biden, it's the neocons who run Washington. Biden has nothing to say. It's always the people behind and the military industrial complex and neocons, etc., that they could say with Biden, we will make a war. That could be also the reason why Biden declared the Afghanistan war closed, so that they have soldiers for another conflict, right? But Russia is sick and tired of these constant provocations and sanctions and all this so-called poisoning of opposition. I mean, in Russia, people are laughing about this. Nobody cares about Navalny in Russia. He's a non-figure. It's only the West that's building him up and saying he is an opposition leader and he's a, and so forth. But in reality, in Russia, he is nothing, right? Nobody cares about him. And the only reason why he is now in prison is because he did not fulfill his the terms of his release. He was supposed to be released early and should have gone to the police every month to report to the police. But he didn't do that. That's why the judge said, well, if you don't fulfill your obligations, then you have to go back to prison. That's a normal thing that happens in England, that happens in America. Right.
Okay. So, what with the situation in a bit south of you? I mean, you're in a very interesting spot there, aren't you? In between Russia and the Middle East, on the east of the Black Sea, we're seeing. We heard last year Biden wanted to rejoin the Iran nuclear deal, and now we're being told, well. From the American side, they're saying, oh, well, they've got to change their position. They've got to renegotiate it. Whereas the Iranians are saying, no, we're not renegotiating anything. You either come back into the deal, the original deal, or not. So what do you make of this?
Well, actually, the latest news from Vienna is that they've agreed nearly 70%, according to the Iranians. The agreement is now at the stage of 70% between America and Iran. So in the background, they are talking to each other to reinstate that atomic agreement, right?
Yeah, so do you think it's going to be put back together by Biden?
Well, I think so. I think so, because the two main enemies for this Biden administration and the neocons is Russia and China, and less Iran, right? And because, I mean, it's not only that the Biden administration is provoking very strongly Russia. What they also did is with China, because they said they will recognize Taiwan. And that is a total red flag for China, because China said, if you recognize Taiwan, we will attack, we will go to Taiwan because it's part of China. So actually, the Biden administration is doing a two-front war, or it's going to happen that way if they continue this politics. And they're pushing China and Russia together.
Okay, so but what about Nord Stream 2? Because Nord Stream 2 is about to be finished. So this is really tying most of Europe, particularly Eastern Europe and Germany, into a deal with the Russians that the Americans don't want to see.
Yes, but also Merkel said yesterday that she does not oppose Nord Stream 2, and it's 95% finished. So they have a few miles to put in the pipes until they reach the German coast. So it's nearly done. There was, of course, a delay because the Americans tried to sabotage the whole thing and blackmailed the companies who were working on the pipeline. But Russian companies have jumped in, and they are now finishing laying off the pipes. And Merkel said yesterday that she is absolutely interested that this project will be finished. And she said many times before that it's not the business of America to tell the Germans where to buy their energy. She said that many times.
Yeah, so do you think that there's a political forces in Germany that might change all that? They might start turning against the Russians and start cooperating with the US?
Well, the worst thing that can happen is that the Green and the Reds, that means the Green Party and the SPD, the Social Democrats, get into government, which looks like it's going to happen. That could be the worst case, because I want to remind you that more than 20 years ago, the same type of green and red coalition ordered the German army the first time after the Second World War into a conflict by attacking Yugoslavia or Serbia. So this could happen again, that the Greens and the Reds will are interested for a conflict with Russia, right? Which is, of course, absolutely stupid. You see, the Green Party in Germany is a CIA project.
Well, have you got any evidence for that?
Evidence for that, sure. I've recorded the message, no. Everything looks like it if you look at the whole history or how the Green Party was formed and who they, you know, their politics and how they have changed. They have always been supporting all American wars, the Iraq war and the Libya war and the Syria war. So they were always, the Green Party is the war party. And they're also the worst people regarding all the lockdowns and that everybody should get vaccinated and all these things. They are completely on the globalist agenda. And that would be terrible for Germany, because it means that Germany will further be deindustrialized. In the last 10 years, Germany has been deindustrialized. That means the German industry has been, one company after the other being destroyed, right? And that's the big problem in Germany, and also the energy production. I mean, it's ridiculous. During the cold spell in winter, which was pretty hard, all those the wind turbines didn't work because they were full of ice. And that means that the propellers are not adjusted. You know, they will fall apart. And then Germany had to import the equivalent of 5 atomic power stations from the neighboring countries from France, from Switzerland, from Austria, and from the Czech Republic to maintain enough electricity for Germany, because they're doing all this alternative electricity production, which didn't work because the wind turbines didn't work. The solar panels were covered with snow and didn't produce any electricity. The coal power stations have been closed down. So they had a huge energy problem. And this is a Germany, a high industrial country that hasn't got enough electricity.
Well, look, also in the background to this, we've got the withdrawal of the Russian ambassador to Washington and the request, the very polite request for Vladimir Putin to the American ambassador in Moscow that he might like to go home. So this is the first time this has happened since before the Russian Revolution. Nothing like this has ever happened before. Now,
exactly.
Okay, so we know we don't trust what the mass media tells us about what's really going on, but this is a very clear sign that there is really no relationship between the United States and Russia, even worse than between the US and the Soviet Union during the Cold War.
Absolutely. You see, the Russians, as I said before, are sick and tired of appeasing and trying to be friendly with America, and at the same time always being punished for things they don't even do, right? And with sanctions and with all these things. And Putin said in his speech that they do not accept this anymore. In 2 days ago in his speech, annual speech before the two houses of parliament in Moscow, he said, "We are sick and tired of this. We will not accept any more pressure from America." And he said that there are red lines, and if they are crossed, we will answer very swiftly and decidedly, military-wise. Right? I mean, the West has had enough warning what will happen, and now they are doing it.
I mean, this does sound as if it could be even closer to an all-out conflict, possibly even a nuclear conflict, than the Cuban Missile Crisis. And yet we're not being told about this at all.
Yes, I mean, you're right. It's the first time in more than 100 years that both atomic superpowers have not got, diplomats. Ambassadors in each country. You see, the American...
Well, yeah, hang on. They've got some diplomats, but the ambassadors are not there.
The ambassadors went home. Both ambassadors are gone. They are not in the capitals anymore. And that's a situation that shows how low the relationship between Russia and the United States is at the moment.
Do you think this really matters? You know, maybe they'll be back home and also everything will be friendly in a few weeks' time.
It has never been friendly. It has never been friendly since the perestroika. America declared themselves as the winner of the Cold War and said we are the sole superpower. And since then, they have been attacking Russia on all levels. On all levels, they have been attacking Russia, boycotting, sanctions, financial punishment, and all these lies in the media, etc., etc. I mean, don't forget that Biden called Putin a killer. How can you do this to the president of another country? You can't call the president of Russia a killer, but he did. Right? That's why Moscow pulled back their ambassador from Washington, for instance.
What do you make of the way that the whole corona thing has played out? Because some people have been saying, well, actually, we've got these various lockdown protests on the streets as well. We've got the Black Lives Matter protests, we've got Extinction Rebellion protests, we've got the makings of an orange revolution here in the West.
Yes. The interest, I mean, the whole Corona thing is a huge fake. And it's the biggest lie that the humankind has ever heard and abided by. It's the biggest lie of human mankind. Because how is it possible that you, that 99.97% of the population is not, you know, does not have a problem with this virus, and because of this 0.1% of the people, you have to shut down the whole country and put people, lock them down in their homes and apartments, and they can't do anything anymore. I mean, that's absolutely ridiculous, what they have done. I mean, for me, this is a global fascist coup. And it's terrible how the media is continuing with this, telling the people all these lies that they have to wear masks and they have to abide and infections and all that stuff. It's all bullshit.
Why is it a fascist coup? Why do you say that?
Because that's exactly what they did. They gave themselves powers which absolutely violate the basic freedoms, the constitutional basic freedoms of assembly, of free speech, of all these basic rights that you have in a constitution. They have all been taken away by this new laws regarding infection in all the countries. So the politicians are now operating like dictators. Like dictators. They are telling everybody what to do. You are not allowed to do this. You're not allowed. If you have a pub, you have to close. If you have this, you don't do this, etc., etc. I mean, in all these countries, the governments have given themselves powers which they didn't have before, right? It is the same thing like Hitler got from in 1933 from the German parliament. Don't forget, it's not Hitler that made himself a dictator. It was the German parliament who gave him the power to become a dictator. They voted that he became dictator and that the constitution does not work anymore. And the same thing has happened now all over the world.
Well, there are some countries that have dealt with it differently, aren't there? I mean, for example, in China, they've had a very strict lockdowns, and they believe that they've pretty much got rid of it. In New Zealand as well, they've had, basically stopped people coming in and out of the country. Again, very strict lockdowns right from the start, and they believe that they're now in a situation of zero COVID.
Do you believe what the government say? I don't believe what they say and their figures. They are saying that the hospitals are full of patients, and when you go into those hospitals, they're all empty. There are no patients. I mean, I did that myself. I got some friends in Switzerland, in Germany, to go around all the hospitals to check up if this is true, that their emergency departments are full of patients, and that's why we have to do a lockdown to lower the so-called curve. And then they found out that there are no people there, that all the medical staff are twiddling their thumbs and have nothing to do.
Well, maybe they've been told to go home and isolate for 2 weeks or something. But look, I mean, I think one of the biggest questions I'd like to ask you, Manfred, is what you think the bigger meaning of this is. Because it's all very well to go along with a lockdown. Maybe at the very start, I think quite a lot of people wanted to do that. But increasingly, people are looking at this and saying, well, it's not really making any sense. What's the real bigger agenda?
Well, the agenda is, first of all, that the power that they have given themselves, dictatorial power, will stay forever. They are not going to give it back. Politicians who have gained this power, we'll not give it back. That's the first thing. The second thing is they want that everybody gets vaccinated. And they are saying that even if you are vaccinated, you will still have to wear a mask and so forth. So they want to get the whole population vaccinated, which of course is a huge business for the pharma industry. The tests that they do is a huge business. The vaccines are a huge business. So it's all about money also. And keeping the people, that they follow orders. I mean, I'm very disappointed that the people of all those countries are willingly following orders. I mean, it is unbelievable that they are doing everything the government says they have to do.
Well, no, it's not unbelievable because this has happened before, hasn't it? Previous generations.
Yes, but weren't we taught after the Second World War that we learn from history, that history must not repeat itself, that democracy has to be defended, and now they just invent a virus and all the people just collapse and say, yes, I will give me the first jab and I will gladly lock down and stay at home. I mean... This is ridiculous that people collapse so quickly.
Yeah, I suppose here in the UK, what we're being told is that the vaccine rollout has been an enormous success. We had the Pfizer vaccine first, which was the first people virtually to have it in January. Were the Duke of Edinburgh and the Queen. The Duke of Edinburgh is literally, Prince Philip has just died. May be coincidence, it may not be. But then we had the AstraZeneca vaccine, and everybody seemed to want to have the AstraZeneca one because it wasn't so much of a gene editing vaccine, the mRNA vaccine. It wasn't so experimental. It was more of a traditional type. And then we hear, oh, dear, the AstraZeneca vaccine is giving everybody, well, not everybody, 0.001% of people a blood clot, which might possibly kill you, although it's very, very unlikely, like a million to one. So everybody suddenly is going back to Pfizer again. Now, I just wonder whether this is a bit of a game. But, I mean, what we're being told, Manfred, is that the vaccines have saved Britain and that now we're getting very close to probably even past herd immunity because of the vaccines.
Yes, but they're also talking about that this is only at the moment like that. What they will do, and they already have done, is that they have said that the virus has mutated, and therefore the vaccines don't work. So they need to get a new shot for this mutated virus. And don't forget that Britain had a total travel ban. I mean, you were not allowed to leave Britain and in many other countries like Australia, New Zealand, many other countries, you couldn't leave. Canada, the same. I mean, you couldn't leave. You couldn't even travel inside the country, right? I mean, this is such a violation of basic rights. For what?
What do you think the link is, if any, to the climate crisis? Do you think there's any link?
Absolutely. Because they have now noticed that this is a great argument also to lock down people to save the planet, to reduce the so-called CO2 footprint.
Well, you've heard here in the UK, though. I mean, I'm never sure what they're telling people in other parts of the world. It seems to be a different message depending on which news channel you're listening to. What they're saying is that we're very sorry, but actually the lockdowns didn't really help the climate, and so there's nothing we can do with regards to the climate anymore, and we're going to have to just ban petrol cars, ban diesel cars, and ban just about everything apart from the new green technology, which, of course, Wall Street and the City of London have invested in.
Well, that's what I was trying to say before. That's a total deindustrialization of the Western countries, and you know that people are not supposed to drive anymore in the continental Europe, especially the Green Party. The so-called ecologists have said that this is ideal, that the people followed the lockdown rules regarding the virus, because that can be also applied to reducing the CO2 footprint, right? Because people don't commute anymore to the offices. They have home office work, no commuting, no traffic jams, less airliners flying around, and also that all is part of the CO2 reduction. That's what they're arguing. Therefore, they will continue with these lockdowns.
Look, another thing is, you and I have been studying the Bilderbergs for a number of years, probably decades now, and they have just disappeared off the face of the earth, haven't they? Henry Kissinger and his friends, Peter Thiel, Eric Schmidt, and the rest of them, apparently they don't exist anymore. They've just vanished.
No, they exist. They just don't, because of the corona thing, they can't meet like before. But what they are doing is, of course, continuing their realizing their big plan of globalization. I think the corona thing is actually a decision by the Bilderbergers, right? If you look at the history of this criminal organization, that what also is very, very disturbing is how the media is not criticizing nothing the government does. They are the propaganda department of all the governments. There is no critique, there is no questions, nothing. In all the countries I look on the continent, the media has completely failed regarding the corona situation. Completely failed.
Yeah, but the Bilderbergs, they meet. I mean, they go fly around in their executive jets. They are also exempt to a lot of the rules that you and I, the lowly people with not much money, have. And they have the ability to meet at any time. They can now do it pretty much in secret. They don't like meeting on Zoom because they know that the Chinese and the Israelis and various other people can just listen in on everything they're saying, and they don't want that. So they will be meeting face to face, I think. I'm just wondering, you know, if maybe they don't need to sort of have anything really public anymore. Number one, because they don't like the idea of being scrutinized at all. Hopefully the intelligence services, the Chinese and the Russians and the Iranians, etc., are keeping a good close eye on them. But they don't really need to do so much now, because they pretty much got control of the Western governments. Their whole role really was to put their puppets in charge of Western governments. And now they've fulfilled that role, and they're rolling out their plan, knowing that their people are now in control of our so-called democracies.
Absolutely. Look, who was at least five or six times at the Bilderberg meeting? Von der Leyen. And what has she become? She is the head of the European Union. Well, that proves again that they are kingmakers. The Bilderbergers are kingmakers, right? Because von der Leyen was at least five times at the Bilderberg meetings and was chosen to become the head of the European Union, right? Although she is completely incapable of doing that. I mean, everything she has touched in her career has failed. I mean, I know her very well. Every minister position she had, she has completely bungled up and failed. And now she's head of the EU. It's unbelievable.
I remember when you and I were at Dresden at the Bilderberg meeting there in 2016, we got a leak from one of the staff through one of the mainstream press that were there. that on the Saturday night, von der Leyen was at the top of the head table with Henry Kissinger.
Yeah, sure, yeah. She was selected by the Bilderbergers to head the European Union. And that's why she became the head of the Commission, right? And that's what happens. And they're always talking about that the European Union is supposed to be a lighthouse of democracy. But nobody could vote her. Nobody could elect her. She was elected just like in the Soviet Union. The head of the Communist Party was elected, not by the people, by some small group of closed behind closed doors. And that's what happened with her, right? And so I'm glad that you Brits have gone out of the European Union and got your sovereignty back.
What do you think is the future for the European Union? Because there are quite a lot of people, I mean, particularly in France, some of the radicals that I've been chatting to in France are really angry about the 7 p.m. curfews that they've had. And they've still got some of these measures. You cannot actually travel around, even out of your local town in France, without special papers.
The same now Merkel decided 2 days ago regarding Germany, putting in curfew. You're not allowed to do sports. You're not allowed to go outside, and etc. So they're doing the same again in Germany. And Merkel just announced this. They just passed these new stringent laws in the German parliament. There were a lot of protests in front of the German parliament in Berlin 2 days ago, where the police really jumped into the crowd and hit the people and arrested a lot of people and so forth. I mean, they're always talking about Russia. They're talking about Navalny. You know what my answer is? Julian Assange. Hello. Huh? What about him? I mean, he's been in prison for 12 years now in Britain. And then they point the finger to Russia about Navalny. I mean, what has Julian Assange done? He's just he's a journalist.
How do you see all this developing, Manfred? Do you see, because I mean, you're kind of, like I say, yeah, Abkhazia, you're in a bit of a hot spot there on the Black Sea. I mean, if these relations between the US and Russia have broken down, it's quite possible that the same may happen between Europe and Russia. You're kind of right in the middle of it. How do you see it developing? Do you think there's any possibility that these people will start to agree? Because it seems the opposite's going on. And what's happening is what they call a kind of hardening of the sides. So anybody that's there's no one is allowed to be neutral anymore. You've got to be on one side or the other. And obviously that is bound to mean it's more likely that a major conflict might start.
No, it won't. Because the Russians say, if you start, we don't want a war. But if you want one, you will get it. And we will just destroy you. I mean, the foreign minister of Russia said, if the Ukrainians think that they can attack, we will destroy Ukraine. And the same applies for the whole of Europe. All the American military bases in Europe will be number one target. There will be rockets flying into them and destroying them.
Well, they've got quite a few of those, particularly in East Anglia, but there's quite a few in the UK.
Well, in Germany, there are 50 of them and a lot of headquarters. Like CENTCOM in Stuttgart and in Wiesbaden. They are the headquarters where all the wars are being managed. They will be the number one target. And also the storage of the atomic bombs in Germany. They will be hit first. It's obvious. Putin has warned the West. If you now cross the next red line, we will punish you that you will regret forever. That's his actual words.
Yeah, but can he really do that?
Absolutely. The West does not realize what kind of a military the Russians have and what weapons they have. And they have learned a lot in the Syria war now. And you see how effective the weapons are there. I mean, a lot of Western military was totally surprised how effective the Russian weapons are. That's why they are selling like crazy their weapons everywhere. Everybody wants to buy their anti-aircraft missiles and their tanks and everywhere. And America has to, like Turkey, for instance, and then the Americans have to threaten Turkey not to buy the Russian equipment.
Well, I mean, this sounds to me like propaganda, really, because surely there's no reason why the Russian weaponry should be any better than the American weaponry. It's all bits an arms race been going on for decades.
No, it's the Russian weaponry is much better because it is, you see, Russia has specialized in an asymmetric warfare. The Americans, they built for $3 billion an aircraft carrier. And the Russians with a rocket of $1 million can just sink it. Bang, it's gone. That's what you call asymmetry. With small weapons, you can destroy the big stuff of America. You see, aircraft carriers were, the last time aircraft carriers were any good was in the Second World War in the Pacific. In today's world, aircraft carriers are just huge coffins with 3,000 people on board. They are just floating coffins.
Now, one major flashpoint might be the Middle East between Israel and Iran. Do you see anything happening there? Because Netanyahu's up against the wall when it comes to his court case for corruption, and he's still banging his fists on the table saying, we want a war with Iran.
Yes, but what they are trying to do, like they always do, is also here, by provoking a conflict, they want America to then jump in and fight the war for Israel. You say Israel cannot attack Iran. What they will do, they do provocations, hoping that the Americans will then do the war, like they have done against Iraq and Syria and Libya, right? And by the way, the Syrians were able to send a rocket yesterday from Syria to the atomic research place where the Israelis built the atomic bombs. And today the Israelis said they're all upset because the air defense did not work against this Syria rocket. There was no response from the Israeli air defense. So they're really upset. That means that the Russian weapons are able to go through the American air defenses. The rocket landed near Dimona, where the bomb factory is of the Israelis.
So I guess that was a threat.
Absolutely. The Syrians are saying, stop bombing our country because we can do the same with you.
Well, that's a bit irresponsible, isn't it, threatening to bomb a nuclear facility? I mean, the radiation will just come out and leak around. It's extremely irresponsible.
Yeah, but officially it doesn't exist. Israel has never said that they have this facility. They've always said, we don't have no atomic bombs. We don't build atomic bombs. And now they're all up in arms because this rocket landed there.
Well, look, there's all sorts of different opinions on the Iranians and whether or not they have nuclear weapons. There is some evidence that they were available on the black market in the 1990s from places like Ukraine and the former Soviet bloc, you know, where the soldiers guarding those weapons hadn't been paid. But what do you think about Iran and nuclear weapons? The other thing, of course, is that there is this fatwa against nuclear weapons by the supreme leader in Iran, and saying that the Islamic faith believes that they are evil and they would have nothing to do with them and never use them.
Look, I've been to Iran a lot of times. I know many people in the government of Iran, and they all confirmed to me that Iran has never and will never have interest in having an atomic weapon. That's all propaganda of Israel and of America.
It's only reasonable and sensible, surely, to have nuclear weapons when you're being threatened with them. It's the only way to deter the Israelis, isn't it? I mean, look at North Korea.
Yes, but Iran has only civil use for the atomic power. They are not interested in creating or having an atomic bomb. Look, since 30 years, as far back as I can remember, the Israelis have always said, in 1 year, Iran is capable of having an atomic bomb. The year passed, in next year they will have an atomic bomb. The year passed, in the next year they will have an atomic bomb. And this has been going on now for 30 years, and they still haven't got it. And you are right, there is this fatwa that they are not interested in an atomic bomb. It's all Mishru to discredit Iran or to make the population in the West agree that Iran has to be attacked. It's the same story with Saddam Hussein. What Tony Blair said, how dangerous Saddam Hussein is, and he can attack Great Britain in half an hour with an atomic bomb on all this Mishru, which was used as an argument to attack Iraq.
Yeah.
In the meantime, every time I go to Iran, I'm able to see everything that I want. They open all their doors, and I can look at everything, take photos of everything, and their military is absolutely powerful, and they have very. They've created their own military technology. I was even 2 meters in front of the drone that they brought down from the Americans. I was standing in front of it and could take photos of this drone. And they have copied it, and they have their own drones. And remember 2 years ago when they shot down this drone, which violated the Iranian airspace. And Trump nearly ordered an attack on Iran because of that. They can defend themselves. The Iranians can defend themselves. And anyway, if you look at the topography of Iran, it's a mountainous country. How can you fight a war in a mountainous country? Forget it. It doesn't work. It's not like Iraq where it's all flat and sand and you can drive in with your tanks.
Well, look, just to round up, Manfred, I mean, one of the main things that we always talk about is the way that the United States, through NATO and other means, the Bilderbergers, etc., seems to be very good at getting the whole of Europe, really, to do what it wants in confronting the Russians and others in the Middle East, etc. Do you think there's anything that, you know, the Europeans, people living in Europe, can do to minimise that chance? We just heard that, you know, there's possibility the Green Party in Germany might be getting more power there. That means more power for the United States in Germany. And we want to go the other way. The Europeans want some independence. And the last thing they want is to be bamboozled by the United States into having another war with Russia, thousands of miles away from America, where America is getting away scot-free and the Europeans are dying and suffering.
Exactly, and that's why the Europeans should finally wake up and become, grow up and stop being colonized by America. I mean, look at what's happened since the Second World War. You turn on the radio, it's only English music. You watch movies, it's all Hollywood stuff. You watch TV series, it's all made in America. There's a complete cultural colonization of Europe.
Well, you also, in Britain, on the BBC, we've got almost every channel now. Every other voice seems to be an American accent.
Absolutely. And the identity of Europe has completely gone. The traditions, the uniqueness of Europe, of each country and of the regions in each country, has completely been destroyed, and we are now all McDonald's, right? And it's ridiculous what has happened. So Europe has to gain back its own identity. It has to become sovereign.
It how? Has to. How?
Well, how? To tell the Americans to f*** off. If I were Chancellor of Germany, I would tell the ambassador of America, I'll give you now till the end of the year to pack your bags and then goodbye. We don't need you anymore. Thank you very much. Bye-bye. And you know what?
Well, then you might have some trouble with the IMF then, mightn't you?
Whatever. If the military bases refuse to go, I just turn off their power. I just make sure that the electricity is turned off and the water supply. And then what can they do? Nothing. If the Americans are told to leave the country, they have to leave.
Well, the Iraqis have been telling the Americans to leave for years now, and they haven't left.
Well, that's different because the Iraqis are not strong enough. But the European countries would be strong enough to tell the Americans to go home. Right? What has happened is that that Europe has for a long time had the advantage of letting America spend a lot of money defending Europe, and the European countries didn't have to put so much money into their own military and could spend it more on the people and the infrastructure. That was a free ride. And that's what also Trump said. Trump said that the time is over and Europe has to defend itself. And not the Americans should defend it. Although defending Europe, that's also an illusion, as if Russia would be, as if Russia has any thinking of attacking Europe. They are not. They have no aim in doing that. Nothing. They want to be left alone so that they can develop their country, which has been very successful in the last 20 years. I mean, come to Russia, you will be so surprised how highly developed Russia has become.
I just wonder, though, is there anything practical we can do? Because most of our political parties, etc., as you were just talking about in Germany, seem to be more than ever wedded to the United States. Put it another way, where do you think the center of American power is in Europe?
The center, of course, Germany. That's why they always concentrate on Germany, because without Germany financial support, the EU would break apart in 5 minutes. The glue that keeps the European Union together is German money. If that doesn't come anymore, the EU just falls apart immediately. So that's why the Americans are constantly working on Germany, that they stay in the NATO, are the main supporter of EU. You know, that's how, if you control Germany, you control the EU.
Yeah, but they can't stop the pipeline, can they? The Nord Stream 2, we started talking about this, but you know, almost everything seems to come back to that. If Nord Stream 2 goes ahead, then the Americans have failed, haven't they, in Germany?
Sure. Well, energy-wise, anyway, they have failed, yes. I mean, it's not that they control it 100%. You know, they can't control everything. And as Merkel said, you cannot tell us where to buy our gas, right? Especially if the gas is cheap and Russia is a reliable supplier and so forth. I mean, by the way, that's another thing. The Nord Stream 2 makes Ukraine obsolete because the pipelines that go from Russia through Ukraine to Europe are not needed anymore. So that's also the problem for Ukraine, that they will not earn any transit money anymore for the gas. And also they can't steal the gas anymore.
So the Ukrainians have been stealing the gas on the way through, have they?
Sure. Sure. That's why the Russians, a couple of years ago, closed the pipeline and said, They must stop doing that. They cannot steal the gas on the way through Ukraine and not pay anything for it.
Okay, Manfred. Well, look, it's been fascinating chatting to you again. Can you tell listeners whereabouts, maybe give a couple of recommended websites where we can get some slightly more reliable news from, and also your own blogs?
Well, I think especially the English-speaking people can do is go onto the YouTube channel of the Duran. It's called the Duran. And because they cover Russian and European politics very closely, and also the channel of Alexander Mercouris on YouTube, he's very good in analyzing what is happening in the politics regarding Ukraine and Russia and NATO. In America and all these things, he brings out a new video every day, so that's something I can recommend. And of course, you can look on read my articles that I write on my blog called Alles Schall und Rauch, All Smoke and Mirrors.
So it's alles-schall-und-rauch.
.blogspot.com. .com, yeah. alles-schall-und-rauch.blogspot.com.
Yeah, and you can always, if you don't want to read it in German, you can always pop it into one of the translation services, and it usually only takes about 20 seconds to turn your blog into something easily in English.
Most browsers have a function where you can just translate any website from one language into another. It's just an option that you click and then you have it all in English.
Manfred Petrich, thanks very much for joining us.
Well, it was a pleasure. Thank you.